you aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch. You must be a witch.
Happy full moon. It's the February full moon. I forgot to check and see which one that is. Risa, do you know offhand what's the February full moon? What's its name?
It's a snow moon, or also like a hunger moon. A hunger moon.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm kind of more interested in this hunger moon business. What, where'd you get that?
You know, it's from the Farmer's Almanac, which I know is like probably a pretty awful just amalgamation with very little attribution of many indigenous histories. But it was where I went before here to sort of just see what is the name that farmers have landed on as the one that they're borrowing from that feels right in North America. And they have a list, and Snow Moon is at the top, and where Amy and I are right now, that feels appropriate. We're deep under snow, just days of endless snow, just white heaps as far as the eye can see.
Yeah. But what does that mean to you, Hunger Moon? For February.
I mean, we definitely see it in the animals here, right? This is a hungry time. They're coming in closer. Their stores have been eaten through. You know, we're sort of wondering how much longer the cold will last. You know, May and I went out. She's like 2 and a half now, and we took pockets full of like carrots and seeds and snacks, and we put them in front of any little hole where we could see footprints. On this walk that we took, and by the time we circled back at the end of the walk, there was like a million new footprints. Like everyone had rushed out as soon as we walked by and like stuffed their cheeks and dove back underground.
I think that's a wonderful way to celebrate the hunger moon.
Yeah, it's funny when you look at your life and you're like, oh, I'm practicing ritual all the time, in a way that before, I think when you and I started, it would have to be like pretty intentional to try to realize what the rituals were that we were doing that were helping us and healing us. And now it's more deeply integrated for me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the same. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's something that you and I have definitely talked about, maybe on the podcast, maybe between ourselves, but this idea of like doing less spell work and more just like doing and it being spell work, if that makes sense, you know, like ritualizing, yeah. Me ritualizing filling my bird feeders, for example, is like high magic to me these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, yeah, for me, it's just being so much more in touch with the present moment and the sort of flickering peace that's there that I am more in profound need of now than other times in my life. Just full pandemic anxiety. I'm just trying to find that little flame of the present more and more. And I think making rituals out of my just daily life is really helping with that. So
something that I've been thinking about that I think is very related to that is like the very, very, very basic tools of witchcraft. You know, like obviously we all love setting up our altars and, you know, getting things and different tarot decks and this and that. But these days for me, it's been all about the moon and water. You know, again, like you don't need to have like some embroidered cloak. You really can just have a glass of water.
You really totally can. I love Sarah Gottesdiener's book for that. I had so much fun talking to her. And listeners, if you heard that episode, I'm sure you're listeners of her podcast as well, Moonbeaming. But the book is so good. It's like, even just right now, all I'm doing from her book is the tarot spreads for each phase of the moon. And just like giving myself 10 minutes to like do a spread and write about it, and I don't know, just that pace with the moon is giving me a lot right now that I didn't have, like my tarot reading as like a therapy tool and a exploration of my interior space tool was like all over the map and how I would use it and super intense sometimes and then forget it and then have cards everywhere and then be doing it for every question in a day and then forget about it. And this is like a little bit of a healthier rhythm, I think, following the rhythm of the moon.
One of my girlfriends and I, you know, there's the sort of standard, the clarifier, you know, when you're pulling cards and, you know, you just want one little bit of extra information, you know, you pull the clarifier. She and I have added the terrifier, which is like, in addition to the clarifier, this is the card you pull and it tells you like, this is what you really have to be on the lookout for. So I think it's been fun to add that to. But just to say one more thing about the moon is that I realized that like at every point in my life, no matter where I've been in the world or in my life, like I've always been able to just like new moons excluded, but then they just make the stars shine brighter. But yeah, the moon has always been there for me to like go and look at. And even now I'll just be like, you know what? I just need to go and look at the moon for a minute, you know, if I'm sad or angry. And I find that it helps. And it's something that almost everybody has access to, you know, regardless of your economic situation, regardless of, you know, what other crazy is going on in your life. You definitely can just go and put your face toward the moon, you know. That to me has been very healing.
Oh, just let that little bit of reflected light. Yeah, that reflected light shine on you. Now, so I have realized things about my relationship with like the full moon and the full moon. Do you feel like you have a good handle these days, Amy, on like how does the full moon affect you? How does the new moon affect you? Because I think it's different for everybody, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Everything's different for everybody. I don't know right. I don't know if I've noticed it affecting me in some like paranormal way, but certainly I make conscious decisions about maybe starting something new or finishing something up. And so it's affected my life, but in an intentional way.
When do you start?
As a general rule, if I want to start something, I'll do my best to start it around the new moon. And again, some people have different ideas about that too. They're like, never start anything on the full moon or never start anything on the new moon. And, but to me, I like that opens the blank page of the new moon, I think. And again, to me, a full moon is like, it's so bright. It's like, oftentimes you can't sleep. So if you need to wrap up a detail, then that'd be the time to do it.
Oh, I am in the same boat. I'm so much more comfortable and brave and excited, I think, in a new moon. It's only by trying to notice it this year that I do think I see a rhythm there. And it has to do with my period and all of that sort of stuff when it syncs up. But I had always thought of a full moon as a time where I always end up out late at shows, having a crazy night. Like a full moon is like everyone is just like bright and bewitched. But now I also have been hit with the reality of the fact that like a really bright light makes shadows darker too. And I saw that go around in a witchy email or something this week, and I was like, I have been thinking about this so much. That the full moon for me is not just this like joy and brightness. It's the shadows are much, much darker.
Yeah, I spoke to a dog groomer that I took Bijou to once, and she also ran like a kennel. When you're on vacation, you put your dog with her, you know.
Dog hotel.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was like, you know, our conversation, one thing led to another, and I was asking her about the full moon and the animals. And as one does. She was like, yeah, definitely the animals are like behave much differently during a full moon than they do at any other time. It is fascinating to sort of watch. And again, it's something that we can all pay attention to. You don't need to buy anything. You don't need to research anything, even. Like, you just need to like look up.
Yeah, or expend any of your like already so overdrawn resources of labor and emotion and just energy and awakeness. Like, I just want to give any listener the freedom to think of this practice not as another fucking to-do on your list. This is about sort of lighting your to-dos up with the moon and just sort of letting the ritual sink into your life. And yeah, just looking up at the moon, offering a glass of water to the night or to yourself or to your spirit or to your ancestors, like, that's enough. That can be okay.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a great point. Like, when you ritualize the things that you have to do anyway, like a floor scrubbing, you know, is the one that I bring up often, you know, then it's like, it's no more shit you got to do. It doesn't mean more shit you got to do. It's something that you had to do anyway, but now it's magic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and there's just something in this idea of hunger moon that for me, that's like, you don't have to do anything extra right now. Just survive, you know? Just warm your hands, drink a glass of water, be on this earth, breathe, survive. You know, we'll get to spring. We'll get to the windows open and the dusting and the spring cleaning and the sort of joyous upturn of all of that and things melting. But like, we're not there yet.
Yeah, that's why, again, like, I'm such a big fan of the wheel of the year as like a marker of, you know, do this, then do this. You know, like, obviously we think of spring and spring cleaning, but just before this hunger moon, we had Imbolc, which to me is like, you know, sort of opening your eyes and really looking around and starting your plan. You know, in spring, you're going to be digging the soil and ideally planting your seeds. But at Imbolc, you're like, what am I going to plant this year? You know, so for me, this snow moon, this hunger moon is like, really exciting in the way that my mom always used to say, plans are free. You know, you can plan 1,000 trips around the world, you know, it doesn't cost you anything, but you do get a certain joy out of making plans. And if you actually bring those plans into action, then even better.
Yeah, I love that. We're definitely at the planning stage of our seeds right now. Are you planning your garden this year? We're planning. I think so many people are planning like a step further, a bigger garden, a more ambitious effort. We've got our organic nearby farmer seeds, and we're setting up our little heat pads and starting to think which ones we could start first, and you know, fixing broken parts of the house to put seed trays up.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, spring 2020 was like the year of the windowsill, you know, like regrowing your lettuce and your green onions, which I did for the first time spring 2020, and I'm still doing, and it still is to me a miracle every time these green onions regrow themselves. It's like, it's a tiny miracle inside your home. So if you haven't hopped on that bandwagon, I really suggest, listeners, that you regrow your green onions and your lettuce. There are other things that works for too. Celery, I didn't have that much success, I'll be honest. But yeah, I don't know if our listeners remember last November, I planted some plum trees. So that was definitely, and you know, got me to thinking about patience, because if I'm lucky, they'll bear fruit.
Right.
Like 4 or 5 years, if I'm lucky, that I'll have plums to eat. And so that's been an exercise in thinking about patience. Yeah, we still have to redo the roof this year, so I'm not doing anything permanent, but definitely I have like many like you know, crate gardens planned that I can move around when we're throwing debris onto the ground where it won't get destroyed. But 2022 is when I think my garden is really gonna get popping. And then patience, Amy.
Oh my gosh. Patience. I love the many-year project. Yeah, yeah. I just love anything that draws my mind to believe in 3 years from now. Sometimes that can feel so far away.
Yeah, well, I was just telling you the other day, I think that I got myself this like 4-year planner, and it's become this like beacon of like hope and like, you know, because when you're kind of flipping through, it seems like a lot of time and very little time at the same time. So yeah, I would suggest everyone out there, like instead of a 1-year planner, try bigger, try longer, you know, have patience. Schedule stuff in for 4 years from now and see what happens between now and then.
Right. It's patience, and it's also really faith. Like it takes faith for me to believe in a month from now sometimes, you know, like it takes faith for me to believe in a couple years from now. And also just imagination. Like I can be so caught up in my work and what I'm trying to accomplish and trying to do a good job and trying to be a good mom and trying to do a good job of interviews and writing and editing and like make the magic that I have promised or something like that. Like I really am somebody who can get caught up in that. And so I just to go back to the use of ritual and ritualizing daily life. I mean, I think I'm a firm believer in a planner. Like my online calendars are layered and many and intense. And then my handwritten planner like gets me through a day. But I'm going to switch to the 4-year planner because I love this idea of like, I'm putting it in the calendar.
Yeah.
2024.
Yeah. And like I was saying, like, it's like, also like, it's like a great eraser of future regrets, because there were a couple of things like, you know, mid-January, I was like, oh, I forgot to do this and that for Yule or Christmas or whatever I was thinking. So I just went ahead and wrote it in the next year. You know, I've like prevented my future self from having the same regret that I had this year going into next year. So it's quite a magical tool.
So really. At what point, it really is. So at what point do you buy the next one? Like, so that, you know, in 2 years from now, you can still be scheduling 4 years out. This is maybe not an appropriate question for the podcast, but my practical mind is like, how many do I line up?
And you know, it's funny because a friend of mine and I were just talking about 7-year cycles. She had been reading a bunch of science about 7-year cycles.
Yes.
And we were talking about this idea of sort of like giving birth to yourself every 7 years, you know, not a very strict timeline, but just as an idea, you know. So something about when you asked me that question made me think like, maybe I need a 7-year planner, but I don't know. Like I had never right. thought about this like continual Uberous snake eating its own tail of needing new journals all the time. I just thought
every year you need a new one so that 4 years you can plan.
I can always be planning 4 years in advance. You know, up until this very moment, I thought like I would fill it. I would get to, you know, 2024 and get another one. But now I'm a bit freaked out. Listeners, weigh in. Listeners, email us at witches@gmail.com. What should I do?
Science witches. Oh my gosh. And science witches, remind us what the thing about 7 years is and tell me, because I'm going to get it wrong. I, from what I understand, so many parts of the body have to be constantly regenerating themselves. They're all doing it on different cycles. Skin and hair and teeth and bone and all of those cells are regenerating on different time cycles, but every 7 years you've gone through it all and so everything is new. Is that, tell us if that's correct. I don't know if I'm even close, but write us something and we'll be so happy to share it with other people.
But on the topic of faith, I think in addition to the 4-year planner, I think something that has been super useful to me is learning about these witches for the podcast and for the book, because surely every single one of them has had cause to lose hope and yet, you know, did not. So Yeah, you know, we say this all the time that we're sort of have always been on like a quest for role models, and that's kind of the thrust, you know. Right. This radical perseverance that like I can only hope to like echo in some small way.
Yeah, and like, how did they find that strength? Or, you know, sometimes perseverance is a map that looks better, you know, from 50 years later. Like we don't see the pain and the agony, but we do kind of get left with the trace of the effect of their day-to-day decisions to like continue to share art with us, to continue to like be honest about their ideas and their experiences of the world and practice the magic of their lives, you know? I mean, truly that has kept me surviving this pandemic year and pregnancy and everything sort of fucked up that's happened and beautiful that's happened since we started this has been just holding on to the initial kernel of the whole idea of Missing Witches is like to educate myself and to find these people I was literally missing in my heart, you know?
Yeah. And not just in my heart, but in my education, you know, like you and I.
Yeah. More so even. Yeah.
Yeah. You and I both have like extensive post-secondary educations, and most of the people we were like, who, what? Wow. Like so many times we said to like, how have we not heard of this person before? Like, how is this not a household name? But I do want to bring up, since you mentioned like at the beginning of this journey, I actually went back into my emails to see, I think we talked about it on the phone first, but the official first email you sent me about the Missing Witches project was almost 3 years to the day before the day that our book comes out in March.
Wow.
And I found that extremely interesting as well. Yeah. Almost 3 years to the day.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so crazy to me because I was like actively doing, I was at the height of my most sort of diligent practice of things I was studying about magic, you know? And by that, I just mean like, I was sitting alone and meditating. I was using, you know, certain things on a beautiful space that I was my desk that I called my altar, and inside little witch cupboards I had other spaces, and I was sewing hand sewn little satchels to put sigils and things I had drawn and little things from around my house that represented what I wanted with what I had written, and like I was really working to, and things that I was writing about were to be able to spend time researching the ideas and spirituality of women and marginalized people marginalized, like we literally wrote that, and then would go over, I would write that and go over to your house and play music and share books and ideas, and it, and I mean, we created what we had wished for, but it's to the idea of writing a book to me at that moment was such a dream, like truly like a lifelong crazy pit in my stomach desire dream that felt like it had to happen and I could never make it happen, you know? So to be at this point where it's like done and they're sending it off to reviewers, it's just like, what year is it? Where's my 7-year planner? I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
It's fucking bananas.
It is bananas. And I we've said this to our listeners before, but like, I just want to remind you all that Risa and I didn't set out to write a book. You know, we started out writing emails, like I say, and you know, those emails become podcast scripts, and then those podcast scripts, you know, in part, there's a lot of new stuff in there for those of you who are avid listeners and are still going to read the book. We appreciate your loyalty. There's a lot of new stuff in there for you, but some of it is drawn from some of our favorite episodes, you know, some of our favorite writing that we did before. But what's so thrilling to me is that through this process, you and I have discovered so many witch collaborations, like, you know, two of our favorite books that we bring up all the time are Great Cosmic Mother, yeah. which was Monica Sho and Barbara Moore. And then also Witches, Midwives and Nurses, which was Barbara Ehrenreich and Barbara English. Deirdre English. Thank you. I knew Barbara was Barbara Moore. But yeah, these ideas of like witches working together and making a book, and now to even think of us again in some small echoing way as part of that lineage is like super emotional for me. You know?
It's so emotional. And touches so many parts of my emotional life. Like even just to think of this sort of the stereotype somehow of women not being good collaborators, and statistically like women not starting businesses together at the same rate that men do, or collaborations, and you know, all of the kind of layers of inherited bias that contribute to that. But to have just sort of so joyfully been able to collaborate and had so much just relaxed fun with our publisher. I mean, literally writing, like looking, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but like looking for a soulmate editor and a soulmate publisher and feeling like those things just walked into our lives. So that gives me so much hope when I am in need of it, that there really is so much power in being just deeply honest and like dirty, honest, explicit with yourself, brave, honest about what you fucking want to do, what you are capable of, what you want to do.
And speaking of honesty, like you remember, Risa, that the first question I asked our to be editor, they hadn't picked us up at the time, you know, our very first meeting, one of my first questions was, how do we make a book?
Yeah.
How do we make a book? I asked Jillian. And you can be that honest. And sometimes it helps. Sometimes it helps.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we got that whole publishing deal also, was like going on a Facebook group and being like, I think this thing I've done should be a book. How do I do that? Internet friends.
Yeah. And I mean, just, you know, to work backward, like for sure, people who have reached out to us before the book deal, who had been reaching out to us to let us know, like, you know, your podcast made me realize that my art making was always witchcraft. Your podcast made me reach out into my own, you know, ancestral lineage. Your podcast, you know, gave me hope. Your podcast was a beacon of light in a dark time for me. Like, and to me, having grown up under the assumption that nobody cared about what I had to say, I definitely think if you had told me like 2-3 years ago, like sit down and write a book, I would have had a panic attack and you never would have gotten the manuscript. Mm-hmm. But if I like, you know, write, you know, 5,000 words and I put it out there and somebody goes, wow, you know, that actually really spoke to me. Then I'm like, oh, maybe I'll write 5,000 more and 5,000 more and 5,000 more. And I think that we can think of that as a metaphor too, you know. Maybe if I do this little thing and then I'll do another little thing and another and another and another. And then 3 years later, you wake up and you've got a book coming out and like literally hundreds of thousands of downloads on a podcast that you didn't think anybody was going to listen to, because why would anybody care about what you have to say, you know?
And to be fair, we have done some projects before in our lives that like maybe 6 people came to. So it was not an erroneous assumption on our part that nobody would come to the podcast. That was like based on many, you know, we're like people in our 40s. Like we've done a lot of shit that nobody came to, or that like, you know, 10 people came to, but one person told us it was cool. And we felt in that moment that like there was something close to the electricity of the thing that I was trying to do that almost happened in that room, and I learned about how I could be doing it better, that would make it closer and just got closer, a lot of the times it did not feel like I was getting closer, to be fair. Oh,
I will say I was doing one experimental piece on a stage one time and it was not being particularly well received. But, you know, a fellow, a like-minded artist came up to me at the end and I think her compliment was like, you know, I really carried this with me. Like, she was like, it was amazing how you just kept going. Because I had a concept and I was going to see it through, you know, I had a concept and I was going to see it through. And honestly, at that point, like, you know, I don't think you and I particularly were super invested. Like, we've never paid for an advertisement, you know, like we've never gone the route of really like being, you know, really super commodifying and buying into that whole thing of what we're doing. And because I think
definitely haven't quit our day jobs.
Yeah, definitely have not quit our day jobs. Still grinding and
Not the kind of project this is.
Yeah, there. And by the way, like it's a pretty scary statistic. Like something like, you know, 99.9% of published writers have second and third jobs. The arts, as we have learned very harshly, the arts are desperately undervalued in our society. And I think part of the reason is that because, you know, nobody's going to be an accountant for free, but people will always be compelled to take whatever that is that's inside of them and make it into paint or poetry or, you know, sculpture or tapestry or pottery or ideas or so on and so on and so on. That is something that we're always going to do, but we definitely
That Gillian Welsh song that we love, that we're going to do it anyway, even if it doesn't pay.
There you go. But I think, yeah, like this whole thing was because, you know, we saw something missing and we wanted to fill it for ourselves, right? And then the idea was like, let's make it so that I had some very unsuccessful tagline. You remember like season two or something that I kept and my mouth kept stumbling over it. So it never caught on.
Oh, but something but I don't remember what it was.
It was like something about like wanting to make sure that these contemporary witches are not ever going to be missing. Something about, you know, recording with the contemporary witches that we talk to in our Witches Found interviews, like making sure that these voices don't get lost in the same way that we perceive the more historical people, you know, preventing that from happening.
Yeah. But like in a really catchy tagline.
Yeah, it never got catchy. That's why I think the tagline.
It's subtext now. It's all subtext now. But that does make me think I wanted to say, when you're talking about people who've written to us that the podcast or have reviewed it, which I was just reading some of our podcast reviews and they're super touching.
Wow. I literally have never done that.
Time to write to us.
Yeah. I find that so anxiety.
Oh, it's fun.
Yeah.
You should do it. They're not all good. They're not all good, but there's some good ones. There's a lot of good ones. People are amazing. I love humans. Even angry humans, I kind of love. But you can tell us why you're angry. We could probably be better. It's fine.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, people who take the time to write to us in emails, those emails, like some of them I haven't answered only because I'm too emotional rereading them, and I reread them and they make me emotional and I think about them a lot and they sit in my life and in my stomach and they make me want to be better at my job. And then I realize like weeks and months have gone by and I haven't written back to that person who is like now in like a pantheon in my brain, a constellation of like how I'm trying to be better. So if you wrote a letter to Missing Witches, and it's probably Amy that wrote back to you, sometimes I do, but if I didn't write back to you, yeah, just know you're in a constellation in my heart and my life. You're trying to be better as a human.
Yeah. That's my answer. I'm definitely like a strike while the iron is hot, because if I do start to think about it, I would become that, like, you know, in the galaxy that you live in for sure. So I'm like, yeah. No, but. Yeah. But I know that, like, my answer is not going to be perfect, because sometimes people ask us for advice too, which also is like really moving to me, because somebody actually like wants advice, you know? It's almost laughable.
We're just so flawed. Yeah. We're just so flawed.
Yeah. But there's some
and opinionated. We're flawed and opinionated. So well, we have a lot of advice, but we're concerned that it's shitty. Those are two things you need to know. But just overpouring with thoughts about the universe and what you should probably do with your life.
Yeah. So know if you write me an email and I write you back that I haven't spent weeks thinking about it. It was just, you know, my visceral reaction. Because again, I know that, and it's the same with the book, you know, there are things, I learn things every day that I wish, you know, I could go back and put the book. And it's the same kind of thing with answering emails. You know, if I could spend 1,000 years and still not say everything I want to say. So I'm more likely to bang it out in 5 minutes so that at least there's something in the tennis game happening, you know?
Yeah. I aspire to that. And I do it in a lot of parts of my life, but missing witches is one I have a hard time doing that with, possibly because you're so good at it. So but it's also like how we edit, right? I don't know if listeners know this or care, but fun facts. We evolved after the first season pretty quickly into a rhythm where, like, we each are writing about half of the episodes and doing our best with research, although I got to work with an incredible researcher for this season. So hopefully you'll feel the impact of Amy's work, Amy Towns Booth's work.
Yeah. Different Amy.
Researching different Amy, yeah. But yeah, so we'll do a lot of research, work on these scripts and drafts, and then at some point in the process, like fairly early on for me, like I try to get as close as I can, and then it's like, I just need you to look at this and just give me feelings. Just tell me your feelings. Like, it's not an editorial process of like, give me fixes. Although if there's fixes to be made, for sure, tell me. It's like, I think we toss back and forth a little bit just to like help us get to the final heart of the thing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and definitely it's not like you should say this here. Often it's like, I think there's something here about this, but I'm not sure what it is. Can you figure it out and write a paragraph about that?
Yeah, that's my favorite, working with an editor where it's like, I have a question about this, or like, tell me more here, or just like, this gave me joy. Please expand.
Yeah. Please expand makes our hearts sing. So yeah, when you're writing us, and if you're writing us an email, we get these emails that are so long and they inevitably have several apologies in them about the length of the email. Mm. And so if you are planning on writing to us, like, please expand.
Exactly. Please expand. That is our response. Put your apologies wherever the fuck you want, because they are a little spell of their own that gives us a little bit of permission to go further and deeper. So I have no judgment for apologies, but just know that our response is, I love you and please expand.
Yes, I love you and please expand. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I guess like the thrust of this whole conversation for me is like, so much gratitude to the people who once again have made us feel like what we have to say is worth hearing. No part of this process would have continued if you didn't. And that is the fuel that fires both Risa and I, just knowing that you actually believe that what we have to say is valuable. And that to me is invaluable.
Yeah, and that's a reflected faith, you know, kind of like the full moon, to bring it back. You know, that's a reflected faith, a reflected light that we're casting on each other. Like, we are such profound believers in the value of what you have to say. and you writ like largely across space and time, you know, people who have had ideas about spirituality and the universe and each other and community that were stuffed in the margins and buried, like you, we are so profoundly interested and we want you to please expand. And when we hear from you that this project of ours helps you expand, that's what's giving us the sort of space and confidence to continue to expand as well. So as always, it's all about the coven.
I can't imagine a better ending than that. Shall we bid adieu to our listeners and and to ask them, beg them, if you haven't already pre-ordered the book, it's going to be out next month. And oh my goodness, please check out our book.
Yeah.
We really love it, so and we're really proud of it. Oh, right. The book is called...
The book is called Missing Witches, so that should be relatively easy to remember. It's literally the name of the podcast. If you Google Missing Witches book, it's all over the front page. Our publisher people have done a wonderful job about that. There's a Penguin Random House link for both .com and .ca where you can pre-order. And encourage you to call your favorite local indie bookshop and request it, and they'll order it for you and then let us know, and we will like send them love on Instagram. And we love indie bookstores. Those are places we have spent a lot of time and gained a lot from, and we love the people who work there and we love the communities they build. So if you can find an indie bookstore to support, that'll get you this book. And I think they will. That's their whole thing. They'll order you whatever book. Indie bookstores are amazing. So do that. We want to hear about that.
I have one other favorite way to support the book, which is, you know, Risa and I have a vast love of libraries and librarians. If you've already bought the book, you can still cruise to your local library and ask them to order it. And that gives you an excuse to go to your local library. It's been a long time since I was in a public library, and now I'm like wistfully thinking about libraries, but yeah. We are so grateful
libraries. Go ahead. I was just going to say libraries throughout the States are doing curbside pickup, Canada too. We love libraries. We love librarians. It would just mean the world to see our book in a library. How cool.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, Risa. Like, we are so grateful for libraries. Before the internet, I know a lot of you who are listening don't know these dark times. But Risa and I are both old enough to remember when when the library was the only game in town if you wanted to learn something. So bless libraries, bless librarians. Now in the internet age, they are evolving into often becoming community centers. So libraries, full moons, and drink a glass of water right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just listen deep in the snow moon, in the echoey snow moon, and in the shadows, there is a voice saying, please expand.
Please expand. Please expand. Because under this hunger moon, we are hungry. We are hungry for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bless you. Yeah. Have an amazing full moon, everybody. And we will see you next month with our freaking book in our hands and, partying it up.
A brand new season that we're working on that we can't wait to share with you.
So. Right. We didn't do any of that business stuff. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
There's a whole other season and it's great.
Oh, we are so bad at business.
You must be a witch.
If you want to support Missing Witches, you can do so by pre-ordering our book, Missing Witches by Risa Dickens and Amy Torek. Or you can look for our merch on TeePublic. Become a Patreon patron. Or use the offer code MissingWitches when you shop at foxglovefarm.com.